This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and editors about politics. It's Thursday, July 20th. I'm Dorothy Wickenden, executive editor of The New Yorker. On Tuesday, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's effort to replace Obama's Affordable Care Act collapsed after two Republican senators, Mike Lee of Utah and Jerry Moran of Kansas, said they would not support it. Now Democrats have to decide how to exploit Republicans' vulnerability. Some think they should refuse to work with the GOP, just as Mitch McConnell refused to work with Democrats during Obama's two terms. Chuck Schumer, the Senate Minority Leader, disagrees. He thinks Democrats should engage in a good-faith, bipartisan effort to fix what's wrong with Obamacare. He's repeatedly complained about the secrecy of the process and McConnell's refusal to schedule a debate over the bill. Here he is on Tuesday reading his remarks from the Senate floor.
Early on, the majority leader told Democrats, "We don't need you. We don't want you." Respectfully, I take issue with the idea Democrats didn't want to engage on health care. The majority leader admitted that he decided the matter for us when he locked Democrats out of the process at the outset. At the very beginning of this Congress, President Trump and Leader McConnell said, "Don't come knocking at our door on health care. We don't need you." Now that their one-party effort has largely failed, we hope they will change their tune.
Ryan Lizza joins me from Washington to discuss the Democrats' strategy in the months ahead and whether or not they should become the party of no. Ryan, welcome.
Thank you. Quite a newsy week, as usual.
It is. I'm mostly interested right now in how the Democrats are responding to this. Let's start by just getting at what has gone wrong. McConnell is supposed to be his party's master tactician, at least in Congress. An editorial in the Wall Street Journal called it one of the great political failures in recent U.S. history. Trump, as we know, hasn't had a single major legislative success in his first 6 months in office. What is the matter?
Well, Republicans are far more divided on this issue than I think many people believed. There's an interesting statistic just to get a sense of how the intensity that Republicans have campaigned on repealing Obamacare. In the 2014 midterm elections, which eventually gave Republicans the Senate, the Washington Post noted this morning that ads that included some mention of Obamacare were in 84% of political ads for Republicans. And yet they couldn't cobble together a plan that satisfied the two wings of the party, the most conservative members who want the deepest root and branch removal of Obamacare, and more moderate members who believe that some of the expansion of health insurance under Obamacare should remain in place. I think it's a little bit surprising because at least the conservatives have been honest all these years about what they wanted to do. The moderates have voted to repeal Obamacare and yet have had a change of heart once they actually looked at the impact of doing that. And on McConnell, look, he's only been majority leader for a short period of time, and he got his reputation as a master tactician by saying no to Obama, by making sure Obama's legislative agenda in his final years didn't go anywhere, in the gamble he took with the Supreme Court seat by denying Obama's final pick. So those are all the things that he got that reputation on. He's never actually been someone who has cobbled together a big legislative package. But he's not an expert on health care reform, and he tried to put together this plan with a very small group of people, and it just couldn't satisfy the two wings of the Senate Republican caucus.
So what's his gamble now? Why is he saying that next week he's going to bring this to a vote? What's going on there?
I think the gamble there is to have a final week of pressure to see if they can amend the current version of the repeal and replace bill, see if they can satisfy the holdouts, and if not, do this pure repeal and see if President Trump and conservative groups can essentially pressure enough of the moderates to say, hey, you have voted for this before, and you should be able to vote for it again. I think that's his final play here, which he has to know is unlikely to work. And by the way, you know, we had the very sad news yesterday of yes. Senator John McCain's brain cancer. And without that vote, you know, the math here is that you have Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky, who's a libertarian, and he's opposing this from the right, and you have Senator Susan Collins from Maine. She's a moderate. She's opposing it from the left, and they seem to be ungettable votes. So he can only lose one more, and without McCain, it seems like there's no path forward, no matter what. You never want to say never. Remember, in the House of Representatives, a lot of people thought this bill yes. died several times, and they did pass it. And so he's making this one final attempt, but it seems highly improbable.
Why does Schumer want to work with Republicans on this issue? By the way, Bernie Sanders has argued since the election of Donald Trump that he would work with Republicans on issues where they could conceivably find some common ground.
I mean, what the Democratic Party stands for at this moment, which I don't think is that surprising, but it stands for opposing Trump and stopping Trump. And that's not that novel. When Democrats in the early 2000s were in power, they stood for opposing Bush. And so, especially given how controversial Trump is and how, probably not too strong a word to say, hated by the Democratic grassroots, it makes sense that a lot of senators and members of the House simply think opposing Trump at every turn is enough, and any cooperation, even on issues where you might actually get a policy concession from the Democratic point of view, is just not smart. But I think Schumer is looking at the 2018 Senate elections. Opposing Trump most of the time is certainly fine, but occasionally saying, I'm willing to work with the president on this narrow set of issues is politically good for them.
What a gift that would be to Trump, who desperately needs a win here.
I'm sort of skeptical that it will happen anyway, because the push from McConnell's conservatives and the push from Schumer's liberals will be so strong to not cooperate. And so, you know, there's a chance that once this bill dies, that the Congress just moves on to the next set of issues and doesn't come back to health care.
So that raises a question about the bigger problem for the Republicans, which is the divide within the party. The jury is out on which faction is going to prevail here. Could you talk a little bit about that and how the disagreements between the populists and the kind of Wall Street wing of the party are playing out in the White House?
Yeah, and that is a whole separate issue, because, you know, one of the things that we haven't seen yet is we haven't seen a class of Republicans in Congress that reflect what arguably was new and is new about Trump, this, you know, alleged nationalist populist conservatism that at least claims to want to do more for working class conservatives and claims to be opposed to the Chamber of Commerce agenda of the Republican Party. There was a lot of talk during the campaign that Trump represented something new, and mostly on the issues of trade and immigration, and occasionally on the issue of even taxes and how the wealthy should be treated by the tax code. And we haven't seen any Republicans in Congress reflect that view of the world yet. And I mean, I think that's one of the big questions as you watch Congress grapple with a policy agenda. Is it just the same old Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell Republican Party agenda, or does it get infused with some kind of new working class, you know, populism? So far, that we just haven't seen it. I mean, there's nothing.
You and I have talked about the group that is going to be putting the tax reform proposal together, and it includes Mitch McConnell, and it includes Paul Ryan, and then in the White House, Trump's economic advisor, who's got the Wall Street agenda.
This is a fight that's playing out now, and you know, sometimes in the press, it's described as the nationalists versus the globalists, right? Mm-hmm. And you have this sort of political guru in the White House, Steve Bannon, who believes that at least rhetorically, you know, this America first nationalism, that Trump needs to sort of stick to that's what got him elected and that's what will get him reelected. And you know, Bannon is constantly looking for opportunities to promote that view of the world. And so far, I think he's been successful in doing it in terms of actions that the White House can take unilaterally, like the travel ban and pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord, saying they're going to renegotiate NAFTA. Those are all things that flow from Trump's, you know, nativist slash nationalist view of the world, and that represents this faction in the White House, Steve Bannon, Steve Miller.
And presumably Bannon does not want a major tax cut for the super rich.
Bannon internally has quietly been pushing the idea of raising taxes on the super wealthy and then selling it politically as an attack on rich Democrats. You know, the way he views it is, you know, you can sell this as an attack on Hollywood and Silicon Valley and Wall Street. That actually represents something new in the debate within the Republican Party, because right now, almost every Republican in the House and Senate and the White House's official position is that when they move on to taxes, tax rates should be reduced, corporate and individual, and then you brush away some of the deductions and loopholes to pay for it. And so if that debate actually gets engaged, you will see a fierce, fierce fight in the Republican Party. I guess if there's one thing besides getting rid of Obamacare that Republicans have agreed on for decades, it's cutting taxes. In fact, I think almost every Republican in Congress has signed a pledge not to raise taxes. Now, we saw a mini version of this fight with the healthcare debate. If you remember, there is this tax on the wealthy in Obamacare, and some of the moderates did say, hey, wait a second, you know, we're not only kicking people off of insurance, we're also getting rid of a tax on the wealthy. I think it's like a 3 or 4% tax that helps pay for Obamacare. It's one of the Obamacare taxes that they wanted to get rid of. There was the current version of the bill would actually keep that tax in place. And that hasn't gotten much attention, but that's, you know, it's sort of a big deal just considering Republicans' absolute anti-tax dogma. The fact that McConnell did actually decide at the end of the day to include that, to keep that tax, to not get rid of it, was a pretty big deal. And so we saw a mini preview of a debate that might play out more when we get to tax reform.
But and the Republican Party clearly is looking to 2018 as well and trying to figure out which version of this will sell better.
Exactly. And we all know that healthcare is very difficult. Once you expand that, it's really, really hard to take it away. With tax reform, or at least tax cuts, I mean, if the Republican Party, given control of the White House and Congress, can't cut taxes, I mean, what's the purpose of the Republican Party?
Well, and a lot of people have been commenting that Trump has seemed so strangely detached from this whole process. Is he just overwhelmed by the ever-expanding Russia investigation?
You know, there's a really good book. I'm going to forget the name of it right now, but there's a great book on health care reform and presidents, and it looks at presidential power and influence just through the lens of presidents who have tried to reform the healthcare system. And the book ends with a sort of series of lessons for a president. And one of the top lessons is that every president who succeeded in making big changes to the healthcare system, Roosevelt, Johnson, Obama, they were deeply engaged in the process and extremely knowledgeable about the nuances of the issue so that they could go to any constituency and any member of Congress and make a case for why they should come around. Trump, of course, doesn't know the basics of the healthcare system. We saw a pretty good example of this on Wednesday when he went into a meeting with all of the Republican senators at the White House, tried to sell them on getting this bill across the finish line, and he leaves that meeting and goes and sits down in the Oval Office with three reporters from the New York Times. And what's the big news of that interview? He just completely trashes his attorney general, Jeff Sessions, who was his earliest supporter.
His most enthusiastic campaign supporter from the start.
I mean, Jeff Sessions. So imagine if you were a senator leaving that White House meeting, you go back to your office or wherever, and suddenly you see flashing in the breaking news alerts, Donald Trump trashes Jeff Sessions. Why would you stick with him on a tough vote like this on a bill that polls in the 20s and 30s? What possible reason would you have for sticking your neck out for him?
Well, and then he threatened Mueller with his investigation.
So he basically threatened the three top people at the Justice Department, And, you know, Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general, came in for some abuse. And I believe the acting director of the FBI as well. And then, of course, the special counsel, Robert Mueller. And Sessions appeared at a press conference on Thursday morning and was asked, you know, whether he's staying. And he did say he's staying. But he's put him in an impossible position now.
Thanks so much, Ryan.
Thanks, Dorothy.
Ryan Lizza reports from Washington for The New Yorker and is a commentator for CNN. This has been The Political Scene from The New Yorker. You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app and find more political analysis and commentary on NewYorker.com. Feel free to rate and review this podcast on iTunes. The Political Scene is produced by Jill Duboff for NewYorker.com with help from Hannah Wilentz. I'm Dorothy Wickenden.